Now, it's very interesting, in passing at least, to compare the five spiritual faculties with the Hindu yogas. After that, I'll conclude by saying something about the pattern of Buddhist work. Now, those of you who have any acquaintance with Hinduism, with the yogas, will know that there are four principal yogas. There's bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge, karma yoga, the yoga of disinterested work, and raja yoga, the kingly yoga, which covers concentration and meditation. Now, this word yoga in Hinduism means union. It means union in the Vedanta with the higher self, or in the theistic forms of Hinduism, union with God. So bhakti yoga would mean the path to union with the higher self or with God through devotion. And jnana yoga would mean the same path or same way to union through knowledge. Karma yoga through work, unselfish work. Raja yoga through the kingly science of concentration and meditation. So how do these correlate? Bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, obviously corresponds to the spiritual faculty of faith. Then jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge, obviously corresponds to the spiritual faculty of wisdom. Karma yoga, of course, corresponds to virya, vigor or energy, and raja yoga, of course, to concentration and meditation. So one can say there is quite an interesting correlation here between these four spiritual faculties out of the five and the four principal Hindu yogas. Those who want further information about the yogas, of course, can refer to Swami Vivekananda's famous books on all four of them, as well as to other works. Now, there's an interesting difference. In India, the Hindu advice usually is this. Suppose you're very emotional, overflowing with feelings. The Hindu teacher or Hindu guru will say, well, you're a bhakta, you're a devotee. You just take up bhakti yoga. Just devote yourself to devotion. Leave aside jnana, karma, raja. You just be a devotee. And you'll gain liberation. What if he sees that the person is very intellectual, a thinker, agnostic? He'll say, you follow the path of jnana, of knowledge. You study the Vedanta. You think it all out. You discriminate between the real and the unreal, and so on. If you see the person very vigorous and active, the Hindu teacher will say, well, you're a karma yogi. In modern India, politicians are very often regarded as karma yogins by courtesy, as it were. You aim at union with God or with the higher self through disinterested work, unselfish work. Politicians, of course, are notoriously unselfish. They give out all their time, all their energy for the public benefit and the public good. Then, if he sees a person is introspective and meditative, a bit uncommunicative, likes to be alone, oh, you're a yogi, a raja yogi. You concentrate and meditate. You leave aside all the other things. So this is the usual Hindu advice. One might say that the Hindu teaching tends to follow the line of least resistance. If you're emotional, then practice bhakti yoga only. If you're intellectual, jnana yoga only. But the Buddhist advice is rather different, even opposite. The Buddhist advice would be, pay attention to that faculty which is weak. Cultivate that. In this way, you'll become balanced. You have to develop all four. You have to develop bhakti, jnana, karma, and raja. So you see the difference. The Hindu will say, as it were, specialize according to your own natural bent. In bhakti, if you're devotional, and so on. But the Buddhists will say no. If you're strong in bhakti, if you're strong in devotion, strong in faith, cultivate wisdom. Otherwise your faith will go to extremes and you'll be led astray. If you're naturally energetic, always battling about, then you should practice concentration and meditation more. In that way, your vigor and your energy will be balanced. So this is the Buddhist advice. Not just one yoga, but all four spiritual faculties. This is, of course, the more difficult way. We always like to follow the line of least resistance. If we're fond of reading, we like to take the intellectual approach. If we're more emotional, we like to take the devotional approach. But we shouldn't just follow our natural bent. By all means, develop the intellect. By all means, develop devotion. But also counterbalance. develop the corresponding, the opposite, the balancing factor too. Don't let your development be one-sided or lopsided. Now it's interesting that mindfulness, the fifth spiritual faculty, isn't stressed in Hinduism at all. Now this is rather odd, rather strange, extraordinary, even striking. But I know from my own experience, 20 years in India, hundreds of times I've heard Hindu teachers and religious people speaking about devotion, speaking about knowledge, speaking about meditation, but not once, I think, have I heard mindfulness or awareness mentioned. It just isn't there. So this is the very important difference, and it might be one of the reasons why in Hinduism we have to choose, as it were, between the four yogas. You can't unify them, because they can be unified only through mindfulness or awareness. I should incidentally mention, in fairness, there is one exception to this, and that is Sri Aurobindo. He does teach what he calls an integral yoga, blending all the four classical yogas. But even he doesn't say anything about mindfulness or awareness. That seems to be a distinctively Buddhist emphasis. Now we should, all of us, examine ourselves, take a look at ourselves, take stock of ourselves, ask ourselves, are we more devotional, are we more intellectual, are we active people, are we introverts, and try to correct the imbalance. Well, we very often find, of course, that women are more emotional. They need to develop their intellects, without any disrespect to them. Men are more intellectual. They need to develop more the devotional side. And I must say that things don't always work out as apparent they should do, at least not at our vihara here, because the other week, at the devotional meeting on a full moon day, we happened to look around. There's a very good gathering, but there's one solitary woman, which isn't what one might have expected. One might have expected just the other way around. But if one gets just one solitary woman at a devotional meeting and all the rest are men, it's a very good healthy sign. Whereas it means that the men, who are naturally more intellectual and given to reading and discussion, they realize that they have to balance that with devotion. It's also a very good, very healthy sign if you get so many women at lectures and discussions and question and answer meetings and so on. Because it shows that they feel the need for developing that intellectual side, which in many religious movements is not developed so much by the women followers.